Hello, effers. That, of course, Woo! Was audio from Chills. The hit movie Cloverfield. Fly, Titans, fly. I'm your host, Internet Keith, and welcome to the Titans edition of Football and Other F-Words. Today, we'll be talking about Titans news. We will review the Week 4 overtime win against the Eagles, and we will preview the Titans versus the Bills. As is tradition, I am joined by some, you guessed it, hooligans. This first guy, he doesn't play to tie. It's DJ EJ. Yep.
He's shaking his head. He does not play to tie.
He agrees that he does not play to tie.
Disapprovingly shaking
his head. This next guy, Zeebo, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Would you say that you're for the boys?
I believe that should be the F word, for the boys. All one word.
Oh, yeah?
Absolutely.
Well, we might have to change it. This last guy, or now second to last guy, he's got Corey on his fantasy football team.
Yeah, he does.
I've got Corey.
It really hurt me.
And I love having Corey.
It's Mike Miracles. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, especially after that Sunday. So
Sunday. And finally, we've got him over here on the couch. It's everybody's favorite couch boy. It's Mr. Lebowski. How you doing, Mr. Lebowski?
I'm having to deal with like a 17-pound sourdough bread looking puppy thing chewing on my hands. You want to give us an update of how you feel about that, Hux? That's my thoughts.
Always insightful.
Yeah. As always, today's podcast is brought to you by an F word, and today's F word is
For the boys. All right, guesses.
As in, you're either for the boys or you're against the boys. And well, you better be for the boys.
For the boys.
Yeah. Speaking of things we're for, let's get to the ad read for the week.
Yo, y'all know what it is right now? Zeebo, for the bill. Let's go.
What do you wear? You should have come to me. Now here you are. Now you better choose for the Ville, cause they're perfect for anything, like snorkeling and wrestling. For the Ville, 615, make it your one and only. Soft like the fur of a chimpanzee, a chimpanzee, a chimpanzee. So you want a shirt that's magic, so you won't look like a cheap whore. Maybe you're tired of red nips, cause I'm coming at you like a clothes horse. Are you ready for a perfect shirt? Cause once you wear them,
there's no going back.
Yeah.
So, if you want to look as good as Katie feels, then head on over to fortheville615.com today and get free shipping on all orders over $100. And with every purchase made, a donation is made to the Nashville Predators Foundation. You can follow them on Instagram, on Twitter, on Friendster, on MySpace, at fortheville615. Coming soon to the store, Tighten the Fuck Up shirts. So tighten the fuck up and head on over to fortheville615.com. fortheville615.com. If you want a shirt that's magic, these are them.
Well, all right, so just to be clear, I just want to let everyone know that DJ EJ was doing the backpack kid dance the entire time. I was very impressed.
I did learn a new word, and it's clothes horse.
Yeah.
And clothes horse is actually someone who is very fashionable. So when I say I'm coming at you as a clothes horse, it actually works. It's not me just getting lazy with rhymes.
I just thought it was what they called Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh. I get it, though, because she looks like a fucking horse.
She does. Yeah, 100%. Well, let's get to Titans.
Such a Samantha over there.
That's not our Sex in the City podcast, okay? This is our football podcast.
We're not ready to announce our Sex in the City podcast.
We need to lock it up. We need
but be looking soon. For sex and other S words.
Yeah. Oh, whoa.
Trademark already.
Touché, sir. Well, let's get to Titans news. Let's start off with injuries. We've got Kenny Vaccaro, who is unfortunately seems like he's out for maybe a few weeks with an elbow injury. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
I just want to talk about how tough he was. Dislocated shoulder in the middle of the game, then goes back and plays after he pops it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to take him out of the game because he wanted to go back in. His freaking elbow, if you've seen the picture, I mean, it's like clearly sticking out. It's right. Disgusting.
Yeah.
And I saw Cameron Jordan, who was his teammate with the Saints, said, like, he saw a picture of it, and he tweeted out that, yeah, I saw this guy with a fully fractured leg try to stand up on it. He was like, Kenny Vaccaro is an absolute savage. So that is a tough dude. Yeah, and he was playing some really good football for us, too. So we'll miss him in the secondary for sure.
And he's going to be playing with the Gronk arm cast for the rest of the year, it sounds like, too, on top of that.
There you go.
And I guess what... Is it going to be just a rotation in on the snap counts with between Cruikshank and Lewis?
My guess it's going to be mostly Lewis and a little bit of Cruikshank mixed in for right now. Because Lewis was certainly the first one in, and I think he was having some cramp issues. It looked like he kept coming in and out.
Okay. It's that time of the month. It happens.
It doesn't sound like they're going out and signing outside help, which is a good sign that they think he's going to be back soon. The timing of it is actually pretty decent because we've got Bills, Ravens, Chargers, and then the bye. So
Ravens would be the only one I'm a little worried about.
I think the Chargers I'd be a little concerned about too.
But the Chargers.
But the chances are they can probably give him 4 weeks to come back.
Yeah,
and that puts him on the long end of the injury timeline from what it sounds like. So I think he'll certainly be back by the time they come off bye in week 8 and ready to roll.
Also on the injury report, Wesley Woodyard injured a shoulder. Do we have any info on that?
Sounds like they think he's going to be good to go. Vrabel said he wasn't 100% sure that they'd see him, but he said they're pretty optimistic. So,
okay. And we'll probably know more tomorrow or Thursday.
Right. Let's talk about, is there any other injuries that I might have missed? I don't think so.
I think that was it.
I mean, we're doing this on a Tuesday, so we're kind of handicapped in a way.
Is Gabbert still in?
Yes, he's still in concussion protocol. Okay. So I would assume they get him back this week. They said he was running around throwing passes in the stadium before the game warming up. So but now that Austin Davis, the video of him taunting the Eagles fans, flapping his wings in their faces, I kind of want him to stay now. I like this guy.
But real sidebar, did anybody see Travis Kelce grab Denver Broncos' middle fingers last night and shove them in his pocket?
No.
So that's what he did with his middle finger, the middle fingers of Broncos fans. He reached up there, acted like he grabbed him, put him in his pocket.
He was grabbing handfuls. Yeah. It was great.
I love Travis Kelce.
He's
absolutely love him.
Let's get on to Rishard Matthews. Obviously, last week some news came out about him, and he decided to, or he asked to be released from the team, and that wish was granted. Who would like to start us off?
I'll say this just real quick, because I think everything's been said pretty much from both me and Big Mike up on the internet. He was not getting used, and I think he got pissed off because he got put in on punt returns and special teams and stuff like that. He's a veteran, okay? So, yes, he quit on the team. I will go back and change where I said that I thought it was mutual, because I really did think it was mutual before stuff came out.
Mm-hmm.
He quit on the team. They try to trade him and grant his request for a trade, but nobody picked up on it.
Yeah.
And we did not know that till J-Rob came out and told us. And then so they granted his release.
Yeah.
It's okay that he's gone. Obviously, it's okay, because, I mean, look how great we looked on offense without him. He definitely had lost a step. He didn't look like the same Rashard. That's probably due to the injury, lack of conditioning, and all that stuff that happened over in a bad offseason for him.
Yeah.
The Instagram post from January, the day after we lost the game, has nothing to fucking do with what we're talking about today.
I think that was reading way too much into something.
That's
that was
revisionist history. Yeah. You're going back and seeing something, and apparently people came out at the time and said that, you know, well, we all knew that when he posted that, there was a lot of us that had concern. Yeah. I'd never heard of it.
That was a thing. It was a thing. And that's
I just never noticed it.
He got off Twitter.
Yeah.
He got off Twitter because people were blowing that out of proportion. And he just
Which
said,
obviously for no good reason.
Yeah.
And I guess that's one thing. And then another thing is that, okay, he quit. But he quit for the best interests of himself and the family. And the guy wants to play. He wants to be a valuable member of the team. And, you know, this is what happened, you know, just the younger players outplayed him. Yeah. He can go to a team like the Cowboys and find a job. He can go to the Seahawks and get used. Cardinals would probably use him. Yeah. There's a lot of teams that could use him. This is a good thing. This is a good thing that we did not keep him around and that he did not want to be around or stay around and cause a problem. This right. is a very good thing. And you can yeah. tell by the way the players reacted when people asked him questions. They're happy that he's gone because he's bettering himself. And from a football player perspective, that's what they saw.
Yeah, I would say, look, it sucks. It sucks whenever a guy quits on a team. You know, like it's a brotherhood. But I do think the more we've learned about it, the reasons behind it. And I mean, to be honest, it really frees up Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff. They don't have to feel like they have to appease Matthews anymore with a certain number of snaps to keep him happy and to keep the, you know, I guess harmony in the receiver room, you know, because now he's gone. And he frankly didn't deserve to be playing snaps over Taylor and Sharp. They had clearly outplayed him over the first 3 weeks of the year. And Matthews had lost a step. He's not a bad player. You know, he was great for his 2 years that he was here before, and he should absolutely be commended for that time. This doesn't erase all that.
Right.
Yeah, don't let this sour what he did.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that really bothered me.
He did the dirty work. I mean, he blocked his ass off. He made the tough catches over the middle. He was a fearless football player. He has a lot of good qualities. And this doesn't need to define his entire Titans tenure. But the Titans were better off without him, frankly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and like I said, I think when the night that he decided this all went down, I think Vrabel had talked about, or maybe it was LaFleur talked about, really unleashing Marcus, and we're at a point where we can really open up the playbook. I kind of think that alluded to the fact that they knew Rashard was going to be around for this game, and we saw a lot of the same Deion Lewis, Derrick Henry back there in the backfield.
Yep.
We saw the receiver step up. Tajay stepped up.
Yep.
He threw some good blocks, and I know he only caught two passes, but one of them was for a touchdown. Yeah. It was a beautiful.
They were
running route,
big catches, because the other one was a third down pickup. Yeah. So they were both big plays.
And they can fill Rashard's spot with Tajay on the outside or Taywan on the outside and not lose anything. We actually probably gain a little bit, and that's a good thing. We've developed three good wide receivers, three NFL caliber wide receivers right now are on our roster. When's the last time that we've been able to say that and be able to say that? This looks like a team where the routes are running and we are going to have receivers open. This is exciting. This is good that Rashard is gone. That's why I waited overnight to react on Twitter, because everybody else was just going fucking nuts.
It was emotional.
That's Twitter. I mean, that's what Twitter does.
Yeah.
But I will also say Nick Williams getting more snaps is a good thing, because towards a pure slot receiver, Matthews was never a pure slot guy. And that's what they were going to have to use him as. Mm-hmm. Because, and this is what Rashard told the A to Z guys, he said that LaFleur told him he was too slow to play outside, basically. Right. And I agree with that. I mean, he was clearly not fast enough to play outside. Taylor and Davis and Sharp all give you a lot more dynamic ability to get open on the outside versus Matthews, and he was playing like 70% of his slots inside. So now you're getting Nick Williams, who is not the greatest slot receiver in the world, but he is a true slot receiver.
Right.
And he had a couple plays during the game that are a little bit under notice. Now, first, obviously the pass interference call that literally saved the game. Mm-hmm. He sold the hell out of it, yeah. and he really did get grabbed.
Yes,
but yeah. he did a phenomenal job
making them throw
it. As soon as he yeah. felt that tug, he threw his body up and showed them. Like, because sometimes if you just fight through it, they might not call it, you right. know. But he made it obvious to where they had to call it.
Yeah.
So he deserves credit for that. He also deserves credit on the play that there's a third and short play. The one that they hit Tajay for like 17 yards on a little crosser. Nick Williams' route sets up Tajay to be open. He did a great job drawing the coverage of the inside guy yeah. on the bunch, and nobody ran with Tajay. Tajay was wide open. So
yeah, I think you pointed that out in the article, right?
That it'll be coming up okay. tomorrow. But gotcha. Yeah, it's he's doing some little things out there that are pretty good. And he blocks well too. So. Yeah,
and go ahead.
I was going to go to Lebowski. He said he wanted to say something about the Richard situation.
So on a side note, if you're a pro athlete, why would you ever have any form of social media? Let me just put that out there.
I agree with that.
I don't know. Wouldn't. If I'm, I think I'm, I may be
not
sticking
you personally,
here,
but you should let like a PR yeah, company yeah, handle it.
Really, exactly.
If someone else like, should read your mentions.
If you yeah. feel like you should have a social media presence for branding or whatever, fine. But like, I don't think Mariota has any form of social media.
Nope,
he doesn't. Good on him, right?
Yeah.
I follow Dante Stallworth on Twitter, and he just posts motivational tweets all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same old mess you read from a lot of athletes, but it kills me. Like, he posted something the other day. It was simply like, get up and make yourself better every day or something. The top quote. I don't think it'd been on there for 30 seconds. Punk ass bitch. Like, yeah. Who just looks at Stallworth or anybody? It's like, this is my moment. I'm going to call him a punk ass bitch. So, but like, so aside from that, going back to Matthews, when I first heard that he had quit, my first reaction was punk ass bitch. No, but it was like, it was the reaction a lot of people had. Oh, okay, good. Bye. Didn't need you. But the longer I thought about it and the more I got into it, and then when I heard Logan Ryan speak about it today, it really kind of solidified the part of he went the route that you would hope anybody would go in any type of position. Now, what drove me nuts last week is people on social media comparing it, you know, comparing football to like a mid-level management job, right? Yeah. They're not the same thing. But at the risk of sounding like a hypocrite, if you're unhappy at a job, and you run the risk of making your coworkers around you unhappy because you're in a bad place, and you approach your boss and say, is my role changing here? And they look at you and say, honestly, we don't see it. And you ask to leave the company, or I guess, you know, in the position of a job, you look for another position, ask for a recommendation. What better outcome could you ask for? Because at that point, your coworkers, they still respect you as a person if you've become friends with these people, you know, that kind of thing. So to hear Logan Ryan today and really get after Paul Kaharsky about the, oh, that doesn't make you for the boys and that kind of thing. He's like, look, with all due respect, look at the route he took. He didn't quit in the middle of the game. He went to his superior and said, is my role changing? And they said no. He asked for his release after consulting his family and deciding that was the best thing for him. And they said, absolutely, we'll give you your release. What other possible outcome could you ask for? Okay, let's just say he ignores that and he stays in the locker room all year, like Logan brought up. He's going to be like T.O. doing sit-ups in his driveway, and I can't remember the athlete he said was batting down balls in practice because he didn't want to be there. So you're just going to stick around and be a cancer and pout. Yeah. I'm not saying Richard would have done that, but it's like
right.
he took the steps of a person who's unhappy and chose to remedy that.
Yeah.
Good for you. To yeah. me, that does still make you a team player.
Yeah.
Even if it's for selfish reasons, you chose to remove yourself from a situation where you're not happy, and by that route, I think you did right by the team. So I think that's for the boys.
Yeah, good point. I'm with him. I mean, he reportedly told Tajay and Taewon, the young guys, hey, work so hard this summer.
Motherfucker, that's exactly what I was going to say before we pass it over to Lebowski.
Well, here we go. Well, do you want to
stole it? Hey,
just say it together.
You've already started. So,
listen, we're for the boys, except when you have a comment yeah. that we want to make.
So he said you work so.
On that comment for like 10 minutes.
Well, you should have got it out there earlier, bud.
Yeah.
So he said work so hard this summer so that they don't need me, and that's exactly what they did. They both have noticeably improved their games. The weaknesses that they had in the last years that they were on the field, those are noticeably improved. So they've outworked it, made him obsolete, and he's stepping out of the way so that LaFleur and these coaches don't feel the need to force him into the lineup when he doesn't deserve it.
So. God, just the way you said that, I can't imagine anyone, especially Zach, saying that any better.
Oh,
no, but listen, to kind of put this to bed, and without, I don't want to over-romanticize it and turn it into something that he probably did not intend it to be, but the more I think about it, like, look, you removed yourself from the situation, and a hands off to you.
Yeah. Good point, Zach.
Thank you.
Well said, Zach.
And just catch my all 22 on Music City tomorrow. I'll really highlight the Nick Williams play on Thursday.
He's guest writing.
All right. Well, let's dig into this juicy Eagles game that we've all been dying to talk about.
God. Please.
I mean, that's all it. I did yesterday was just rewatch all the clips. Not only the clips of everybody celebrating, which. The clip of us in the suite from the podcast has almost 50,000 views, by the way, not to brag.
Humble brag.
Honk, honk.
But, I mean, just everybody's views from it, the happiness, the joy of the fans. I mean, but the plays were just phenomenal when you go back and watch them. And it's hard to see that live. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see people get open, but you don't see all the nuances of everybody getting open or why they got open.
Right.
It was probably, I've been to every home game and a few away games since 2009 season. I've been to a few in 2008 and previously, but every home game. That was easily, I didn't think anything was really going to top the feeling that I got from the Texans game, because that Texans game was just so weird and different and stuff, and the crowd was into it, and there wasn't Texans fans. This was the best game, I thought. And there's the Detroit Lions game, the Packers game, the Seahawks game, in all recent memory. This just was it.
Yeah.
It was a dogfight with a very good Eagles team, and that fan base showed up. And it was surprising to hear Logan Ryan today say that he didn't really notice a lot of the fly, Eagle, fly and all that. But it was a dogfight in the stands. I mean, You were working just as hard as it felt like the players were working.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not true, but I get the
Well, it may depend.
The point they made on midday 180 today that really resonated with me was the Eagles fans and their intensity and the number of them that were out there really kind of almost made the Titans fans get engaged more, because it was almost like
a one-up sort
of
thing.
Hey, screw you. You're in our stadium. We're going to be louder than you.
Right.
And I felt like it pushed the intensity of the entire crowd up a notch. And you did, when the Titans were on third downs later in the game on offense, it was definitely loud. The Eagles fans were loud. But when the Titans were on defense, it was even louder. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. I mean, you never want to see that many opposing team fans in a stadium, but I thought it was fun. I mean, it was obviously the result helped a lot with the way I'm remembering that, but I thought it was a great atmosphere.
I think it helps that Eagles fans are just such dicks.
Yeah, that
certainly helps. You don't want to hate. Yeah, they're just so easy to hate, and there was many in front of us where we're screaming down to them. You know, the guy in the Ertz jersey. a lot of Celek jerseys, that. The seeing sometimes the opposing team fans' jerseys and seeing Brent Celek is just a reminder. Jerseys are not a very good investment.
Right.
And I say that as a guy who just bought a Derrick Henry jersey, and I know I'm going to regret that in 2 years when he's not playing for us anymore. But they're not a good investment.
No, not usually. Unless you want to buy a Harold Landry jersey.
Yeah.
In that case, just go ahead and do it.
We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But
Or Corey Davis. I'm in for both those.
So let's talk about the job that Vrabel and staff did in this barn burner.
I mean,
unreal.
I know we're going to get to this in the next podcast, but I'm just going to say right here. Coach of the fucking year and the quarterway through. You can make a case for Matt Nagy all you want. You don't even know how to fucking say his name, so you can't be coach of the year. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
This is a fucking amazing balls out. Someone, I think it was the South Park episode where Stan's dad has the wheelbarrow. The elephantitis of the balls.
To get medical marijuana.
Someone put Vrabel's face on it. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. And then if you go and listen to him on the fourth down play when we, in overtime, when we have the the kicking team out in the field. He used up all that time, and the kicking team thinks, the special teams, they think they're going to kick the field goal.
Yeah.
He's over here telling Taylor Lewan, no, we're going for it.
Yeah.
And then they're drawing up a play. They knew they were going to call a timeout the last second. The reason they did that is because they wanted more time with the offense to draw up the game-winning play.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing to me. Like, it blows my mind because we've seen such shit coaching really going into the Jeff Fisher era at some point. This level of thinking from a head coach who has gotten dogged by many, many experts saying that he's doomed to fail because he has no experience. That's more experience than a lot of fucking head coaches have right there.
Yeah.
I fucking love this team. I love it so much I can't form words sometimes.
I am so blown away and impressed by Vrabel. Like, Buck Rising has been talking about how prepared the team is. And I think that's kind of the word that best describes Vrabel to me. He is ultimately prepared for everything, and that's a perfect example of it. Him knowing exactly what he was going to do. He was going to send the field goal team out, pull them back, make them use that timeout, and then, you know, they'd call a timeout afterwards when we sent the offense back out. So he got back-to-back timeouts to really let the offense rest, get them ready, get everybody on the same page. So that kind of stuff matters. And the fact that he's aggressive, you can tell he's confident in his players, and that confidence, when you show confidence in your players, that matters to them.
I got fucking chills just hearing all of this right now.
Because, the Byard thing, you know, on the punt, fake punt from a couple weeks ago, I know we've already talked about it, but he tells Byard, look, I don't care if they show this look, don't even look at me, just go for it. I trust you.
Yeah, don't tip your hand, just go.
I mean, that is what makes, this goes for all walks of life. Empower your employees to do their job and then get out of the way and let them fucking do it.
Yeah.
And that's what Mike Vrabel's doing. I mean, he's doing it on a football field, but it's no different than managing in real life. I mean,
on a football field because, you can't, if something happens in the middle of a play, you can't go out there and do it. If something happens in the middle of a cell, you can still go out there and fix it in the middle of a cell.
Yeah.
Not in the middle of a play. The play happens, it's done.
Yeah.
So you performed or they don't.
Yeah.
It means I know from seeing him on the, what was the last game? The away game.
The Jags.
Yeah.
What I noticed at the Jags game is that he's just chilling on the sidelines. Like, he does not, he gets upset when there's a bad play call.
Sure.
And he gets excited when we do something good, but If in the face of adversity, he's just like, okay.
Calm, cool, collected. Yeah.
I got something for this. I got something up my sleeve. I think I've seen this before. And I think this is where playing for Bill Belichick really does come in. They've seen a lot of different things and always cool.
Yeah.
What was it like? What was your impression, Lebowski, because you watched it from on TV. What did you get from the commentators about Vrabel's job?
Well, I'll back up and say this. This is now two games, along with the Music City Miracle and this game, that I had a chance to go to the game, and I did not, and I will never fucking forgive myself for not going. The Eagles game especially, just throughout the week, I had multiple chances to kind of jump on an opportunity to go to the game, and I was so mad at myself I didn't. And I will say this, watching it on TV, the Eagles fans were not as loud as it probably sounded in the stadium. On TV, you could barely hear them. And you couldn't really see it either. The way what our crowd was wearing with the Eagles, it really didn't look like that. But anyway, I'll say this about Vrabel. Watch the Miami game if you can stomach it again, and read our injury line and tell me this team is an 0-4. The only reason why this team is 3-1 because a team has bought into its leader. When you work at any company, small, large, whatever, and you get in the shit, the ones who separate themselves from the pack of elite to become a leader are the ones who have intuitive, forward thinking. The example of the timeouts just the fact that you have that thought process in a game to think about that. That is shit you cannot teach. You either have it or you don't. You're either a leader or you're not. And He is. I am so sold on this head coach. Mm-hmm. Four games in.
I can be more sold. That,
like, exactly.
I want to murder anybody who says, oh, he's a shitty coach. Yeah. Or he's, oh, it's just four games. It's four of the worst games that would have, that could any other head coach may not have overcome. And it's ridiculous when people downplay Vrabel.
And I'll say that I think it's not just Vrabel. I mean, Vrabel's obviously a big part of it.
I mean, but his entire coaching staff.
I can't remember if it was you, Mike Miracles, or if it was Travis Haney, but somebody wrote an article and they were saying that during that final drive, like before that final drive happened, like throughout the drive, he had an assistant coach in his ear in the headset going, hey, if you're going to go for it, you've got to keep it moving. You can't like sit and run clock, because otherwise you're not going to have enough time. And so that's like already in their head. They're not even necessarily thinking field goal. They're thinking, let's fucking win this game the whole way through, which is, I can't say enough about it. Yeah.
That was from a Peter King article where he was talking about John Stryker, who Vrabel brought from, I think coached with him at Ohio State, I want to say. He's been like in the football operations side at a couple universities since, but he brought him in as part of the Titan staff. And he's like, I think he's listed as like assistant to the head coach or something like that, which aside from all the like Dwight Schrute jokes available, I had no idea what that was. But now after Peter King's article, it sounds like Stryker is the guy that's, he's looking, I would
almost
assume,
like the analytical guy.
I would assume based on all the comments that we've heard, and you know, we can't get confirmation on this from either side because I've actually tried, but I assume the Titans have hired an analytics. I know they have an analytics staff, but I think they've probably hired a outside consultant as well.
Interesting.
And I think they are getting analytic information because this is what. And he also talked about Doug Peterson and what influence Doug Peterson has been on him. And that's exactly what the Eagles did. They hired Edge Sports. They have game books, every game printed off of down, distance, time remaining. Should you go for it or should you not? You know, fourth and three at the 42-yard line with 6 minutes left. Should I go for it or should I not? And it's go or no go. And it'll tell you kind of the percentage of yes or no. And They make their decisions based off of those.
Yeah.
And it's an aggressive way to play because it's going to tell you to go for it more often than not, especially if you're between the 40s. And I think Vrabel is using something like that Stryker is radioing down to him on, you know, because he said he uses them for timeouts. He uses them for fourth down calls, for extra points, stuff like that. And I think he's the guy that's kind of handling that and giving advice throughout the game. And I've been dying for the Titans to have somebody like that for years. Because it makes no sense, some of the screw-ups in game management that this team has had over the years. Yeah. And now we've got a coach that has a proactive approach to that. And it could not be more refreshing.
Yeah, and I'll bring some light to that a little bit in our next podcast on the NFL edition. I want to talk about some stuff that some historic coaches have done.
That's a tease.
So let's talk about Marcus Mariota and how he played versus the Eagles.
Well, first off, because we just got done talking about the coach, did anybody watch his press conference or listen to it after the game?
Yes. I have not seen it.
I did not. Please inform us.
Okay. So Jim White asked him, he goes, how do you feel about, you know, going for it, not playing for the tie? And he just went in on Jim Wyatt, and he said, well, this is kind of a weird question. It's, I mean, like, this is not verbatim. He either said weird, silly, or stupid question. Hmm. And he goes, I mean, we play to win the game. I mean, you got to win. And it sounded very like, it was a lot like Marcus would be without, you know, a bunch of fucking microphones in his face. And it really sounded like a little bit of Vrabel rubbing off on him and his competitive nature and stuff. It was, and it was toward Jim Wyatt, which is very interesting. But I think this performance is the, I know it's the Corey Davis performance, so we'll probably talk about it here in a minute, the coming out party. I don't know, it's kind of the Marcus coming out party for me. Like, this is the game that we've all been waiting since last year. We saw this in 2016. This is the one that got us excited for 2017. Then 2017 happened, and it put a lot of doubt in people's mind, reasonable doubt. We knew that he was a good quarterback and married to a bad offensive system. And then a little rough start, but it's bad luck. But this game to me is like, I'm in. This is our Samoan Jared Goff. I'm ready. I'm ready for the ride. I'm in.
It was without a doubt the best performance he's ever had in his career, especially considering the opponent, considering the fact that he was coming off of freaking nerve damage in his throwing hand.
He must not have the either. He's at 95% and the glove is doing the rest of the five. Or
he just needs to stick with the glove.
Yeah. Can I just say, I hope he does. I think it's a cool fucking look.
It is. It is. It's kind of badass.
Yeah.
But he, I mean, the numbers, of course, speak for themselves. He was like 30 of 43 for about 340 something yards, two touchdowns, one rushing. And he also had like 50 yards rushing, I think. He had over 400 yards of total offense by himself. And
don't forget the three drop passes that were dimes.
Yeah.
They were right on target.
We've been waiting because everyone's been talking about, oh, well, the Titans just want to run the ball. How many articles did we see last week from freaking idiot Eagle writers saying, look at the stats. The Titans just run it all the time. We're going to kill them because we're good at run defense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look. Of course we ran all the time. We were without our top three tackles. And
we were playing with Blaine Gabbert.
Why would you think that that's what's going to be the offense moving forward now that people are healthy?
Right.
And so obviously we come out and we're throwing it. We're running a ton of play action. This is exactly the offense that I thought we would see along.
Oh, my God. It got me so fucking horny.
And Mariota threw five balls down the field more than 20 yards. That traveled more than 20 yards in the air.
He can't throw deep. He can't throw deep.
He threw five of them. The Titans had only thrown four all season heading into this game, and three of those were from the first half of the Miami game before he got injured. They had thrown one ball more than 20 yards in the last 2.5 games. So obviously the offense was much different than what it was when we were banged up, as it should have been.
I'll tell you what, that Marcus Mariota category on Pornhub is going to be awesome.
Dude, those deep balls, the five that he threw, he hit two of them, and then the other three were all dropped. I mean, they were all right in the chest. Now, Taylor's, I went back and looked at the replay. He got smacked right in the face mask as the ball was coming down. So, I mean, I get why he didn't catch that. It should have been a, spot foul at like the 10-yard line, which would have made a huge difference too.
Sure.
But I will say,
I want Landry, to watch this game again.
Landry got away with a face mask on Wentz on his sack, so I'm going to say those two wash out. But anyways, I mean, this is the crazy thing about the deep balls. This is exactly what I saw from him in camp. This is what I was so excited about in camp, because even though he struggled a little bit on some days of camp where he was just, a little erratic with his accuracy, stuff like that, the deep ball seemed to be locked in more than it ever has been with him, and that's exactly what it looked like.
He's got a swagger back, bud.
And some of those throws were with pressure coming in his face. I was looking at distance of the ball, like on some of those, 50, 55 yards in the air, dropping like between two defenders right into the receiver's arms.
I believe during the Thursday night game, you told me that Marcus does not have the arm strength to go 55 yards. And
when he was dealing with nerve damage.
That in the text message, because I said this is what Marcus is going to look like, talking about Jared Goff. And you're like,
I'll say this. Marcus doesn't have the arm that Goff does. I still stand by that. Now, I also said I don't think it'll ever hold him back from doing what he needs to do. He's got enough of an arm. He doesn't have the Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jared Goff cannon, but he's got plenty, and he showed it. I mean,
the Rex Grossman unleashed the dragon arm.
But he's got plenty of arm, and he showed it downfield on Sunday. It was a thing of beauty. And beyond just the throws, his pocket movement was incredible. He avoided rushers. I mean, the Eagles brought a ton of pressure like they always do, and he was able to avoid it, move around the pocket, keep his eyes downfield, find open receivers even when Jonnu Smith was dropping passes and everything else that's going on. But, I mean, complete control of the offense, looked amazing. If that's the Mariota we're seeing from here on out, this offense is going to put up massive numbers.
Yeah. Speaking of massive numbers, let's talk about Corey Davis and his coming out party.
Woo. Let's talk to our couch potato correspondent. How was the Corey Davis looking on TV the whole time? Did you notice that he was amassing all these yards?
He looked fantastic. He looked like a different person from games 1 through 3 to 4.
Yeah.
He really, really looked a lot better. And I'll say this about Mariota. Mariota looks like a quarterback who has finally been told by his coaching staff, do your thing.
Yeah.
Instead of being held back by a playbook with a coaching staff that is not going to let him deviate. He looks like a quarterback who is basically they've given him the trust on the field. Do what you think is necessary. No, Corey Davis looked fantastic on TV. I was doing so much yelling and screaming at the end of the game when he caught that pass. I actually had to go back and watch again to make sure it was him that caught that pass. Because it was like, as soon as I saw the ball, the trajectory, and someone going up for it, it was and just running around the living room. And then I had to actually stop and make sure, okay, yes, they did. Like, it was him that caught it. But looked phenomenal.
It was awesome.
He looked like a... How do I say this without sounding a little homoerotic? He looked...
It's okay, but you're looked, among friends.
He looked more beastly of a receiver than he has in the last three. Yeah, he looked great. It was good. Yeah. I'm going to stop now before he...
I don't know if we were doing this on air or off air, but last week we were talking with Travis Haney and trying to come up with a comp for him, and I think we chose Chad Johnson.
I think Chad Johnson was one. T.O. was thrown out there.
Yeah, I think the T.O. one's a good one.
It's like a right in between T.O. and Chad, because Johnson
could be A.J. Green.
I think he's stronger than AJ.
Yeah, he may be a little bit stronger.
He's a little bigger and stronger.
Yeah, I think so. I don't define beastly with AJ Green and even so much Chad Johnson. I'm going to keep using that word beastly. You can follow me on Twitter, Corey Davis. It's at Mr. Lebowski. Beastly.
The DMs are open.
Mr. Lebowski.
The DMs are wide open.
Slide on through, my friend. Zeevo, what were your thoughts on Corey?
It was just like... Every time I looked up when we were on offense or I looked over, he's catching the ball. I mean, it was so weird. I didn't really notice I wasn't noticing the yardage as much as I was
the reception
numbers. How that he was open. And he was open because of the offensive scheme, obviously. I mean, and his talent too. But the plays that he was making were great. I just wasn't noticing the distance. And you know, I always forget that he's never had a regular season touchdown until that play, because he's looked so good this whole year. I think that's the thing. I can believe if someone, you know, tells me, oh, you know, he didn't get a regular season touchdown last year. That's fine. He got two in the playoffs. So, you know, I know in a meaningless win or loss, but, you know, I look at it, this year, he's looked so good week after week after week, and we pounded on the podcast. We didn't pound each other, but Big Mike talked about it on Twitter because he wasn't here last week. We talked about it on the podcast. I talked about it on Twitter. This Titans film room did. Yeah. Everybody had the feeling that if you'd been watching Corey these last few weeks, this was his breakout game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it delivered, and that... the way that he sold routes and turned his head and stopped on his, you know, stopped in the routes to make a turn to fake out the DB and all this stuff. It's elite level route running and trickery that I would not expect from a second year wide receiver quite on that level. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it, but guys, this is a number one wide receiver that, I mean, we got him.
Yeah.
We got the number one wide receiver.
Finally.
And fuck those people who said that we should have drafted O.J. Howard at 5 or that we should have drafted, Marshawn Lattimore. We got what we needed at the right time, because look at what happened this last Sunday. Yeah. The Eagles are no slouch on defense. I mean, it's a Jim Schwartz defense. How many people had wished these last 5 or 6 years that we had Jim Schwartz as a defensive coordinator?
Yeah.
So don't go changing your tone and saying, oh, well, the defensive back sucked. Yeah, they fucked up here and there. Our defensive backs kind of fucked up here and there, too. So it kind of played out. defensive back play was kind of even, but Corey Davis took over that fucking game.
Yeah. And I didn't think the Eagles' defensive backs were just letting people run right by them.
It's excuse making.
Yeah, I mean, Davis was beating them. Yeah. He was open because he was beating them.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's, like you said, the salesmanship on the routes, the out and up that he ran, where he puts his foot in the ground, the detail of the jab step and then the look back over the outside shoulder, and you can see as soon as he looks over that outside shoulder, Mills breaks, and then he just rounds it right up the field and is wide open. That kind of level of detail, and then he had another one on that deep post, that 51-yard catch that he had, where it's meant to look like a corner route, because then I'll show this kind of on the All-22 when it comes out this week.
It's my All-22.
Sorry. Zach's All-22 this
Humble
week.
Humble brag.
Slide on my DMs. It's my All-22.
But they make all these concepts look similar until they're not at the very end. So they run a lot of these full bootlegs where that is a corner route instead of a post. And if you watch his route, he runs an inside slant on the stem. He gets vertical, and he actually starts to bend it outside almost like he's about to run that corner route, and then he snaps it back inside for the post, and that's why he's open by 10 yards. So it's the details in the route running, and credit the players, because the players are the ones that are executing it and doing it and taking the time to pay attention to these details, but also credit Rob Moore, because it's not just Davis. Taylor and Sharp are doing these things too. I mean, Sharp's route on the touchdown was fantastic. I mean, he gets flat and then waits for the defensive back to come up on him. He gets his inside elbow, pushes him past, and is right there wide open in the end zone. Details like that matter so much to wide receiver play, and all the Titans receivers are starting to execute that at a high level, right. And they're all young guys. So they've got all the physical talent. Taylor and, you know, Davis especially have all the physical talent in the world. If they can add all of this in with it, this is going to be a very difficult wide receiver core to stop. And I don't think anyone expected that, at least outside of Titans universe, coming into the season.
Yeah,
these guys are playing at a really high level. And all it took was an offensive day where we're not running the ball 40 times and throwing it 20 times for us to finally see the numbers accumulate. That's all this is. It's not, oh, they suddenly started playing good. It's they've been playing good the whole time, and now the offense caught up to it.
Do you have anything to add on Tajay and Taywan?
Well, I mean, they were just awesome. I kind of want to go back and touch on the Corey Davis, the post route with the 51-yarder.
Yeah.
Is that the play that you think they've been working on with that they've had the miscommunication with in the Steelers game or anything?
Because Corey would
break off or whatever?
No, that was a different one. The one that they hit the post on was that was a Yankee concept, and they run it a lot, and they get it on like that half roll out of the pocket, and Taylor will run a deep cross from one side, and then Davis clears out with the post. And
gotcha.
A lot of times they'll hit that deep cross, but this time the Eagles were playing like a cover three robber, and Fran Duffy and Greg Cosell talked about it on an Eagles podcast that somebody shared with us in our group chat. And it was interesting because you could see LaFleur kind of setting it up as the game went on. They were hitting all these crossers. The Eagles kept leaving that middle safety a little bit shallow to try to take away the crossers, and then boom, they hit them over the top of the post. And it's stuff like that from LaFleur setting up plays throughout the game and making things look the same.
The Shanahan, style of play.
LaFleur called a hell of a game.
But Tajay, let's not downplay Tajay, and I've already talked about a little bit of him, but, you know, he was very integral in a bunch of stuff, even when he wasn't the one catching the ball, and that's huge. But Taywan has proven that he is reliable in this offensive system, and I know we had questions about, can he grasp the playbook? Can he run the right routes? Can he be, you know, there when you need him to be there? He's there.
Yeah.
I know that we're very under the radar, and I know that the numbers aren't there right now, but probably by the end of the year, you're talking about, barring injury, of course, that a top 10, top 8 wide receiver trio in the league. And there's a lot of good wide receiver trios in the league, but I have full faith that this trio can be just as good as what Robert Woods and
Cooper Kupp
and
Brandon Cooks
can be. I mean, yeah. I don't see any reason why they couldn't be just as good as them and just as productive.
Yeah. I think they're playing at a really high level, and I'm no longer worried about the wide receivers. And like I said earlier, I think even Nick Williams and, you know, Darius Jennings has done some nice stuff. Obviously, that drop was horrible.
Yeah, that drop was horrendous.
But Darius Jennings has done some nice stuff, and you saw his speed on that play. I mean, he blazed by the Eagles secondary. Yeah. I didn't know he was that fast. I thought he was pretty fast, and obviously we saw the kick return against Miami.
Right.
And he can definitely run, but those were some jets. I mean, I hope they go back to him at some point with that, because he's got some potential to make some big plays.
For sure. Well, let's talk about the other aspect of the offense. Let's talk about the run game and the struggles therein. Do you think that was just a result of a tough Philadelphia defense or what?
No, we've seen the struggles, and I think the narrative that Deion Lewis is the better back is also pretty far out there, but I'll let Big Mike take over what the struggles of the run game are.
So, watching it back, I didn't think Henry played poorly. The drop on that toss sweep was particularly painful because the Titans actually had a nice alley blocked up on that play, and that could have been a big run for him, but obviously, outside of that, I thought he played fine. The problem the Titans are having in the running game, more than anything to me, is one, they were up against Fletcher Cox and Michael Bennett and Brandon Graham. That's a great defensive front in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. There's a reason they're the number one ranked run defense in the NFL.
Right.
And we saw it. And they're going to be tough to run on. Now, obviously, this isn't a new thing, but if you want to look at the Jacksonville and Houston games, obviously everyone knew that we were going to either be running or throwing short passes. So you've got linebackers and safeties playing up a little bit tighter, playing on their toes, coming downhill. I don't know that there's a huge structural issue with the running game right now. I don't think Henry's playing bad. I don't think Lewis is playing bad. I don't think the line's playing bad. I think if there's a weak link right now, it's the tight end blocking out of Jonnu. Jonnu was bad again in this game blocking. I thought he got better last week. It was worse again this week. It was not good, and he's missed too many blocks that just blow up plays, and that's the problem we're having. And I don't know what you do about it if you just start playing Stocker more, but he's a zero threat almost in the passing game. So I think the Titans have a little bit of a tight end problem, but I don't know what you do about it at this point. There's not like you're going to bring in a productive tight end off the street, so I think you just got to coach up Jonnu Smith and try to get him playing better.
Trial by fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other side of the ball. Let's talk about the defense. Let's talk about some delicious Harold Landry play.
Harold Landry, Jarrell Casey. Yeah. I mean, Sharif Finch got himself a sack. Yeah. I mean, it was... I can't believe the Eagles scored as much as they did, to be honest with you, because it seemed like we were bullying this all-pro studded offensive line, and I feel sorry, and I know we'll talk about it here in a second, but I feel sorry for the fucking Bills.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, it's going to be a shit show. For the Bills, anyways.
Jarrell Casey is playing at, like, borderline defensive player of the year levels.
Borderline?
Right now.
I would say he 100% is defensive player of the year.
That's a tease.
Yeah. All right. So I think he would be... I think if the season ended today, he should be in the conversation.
Yeah.
Because he's just playing at a crazy level. And it's not even just, you know, he's got three sacks, which is good, especially for an interior defensive lineman at this point in the season. And he's got a ton of tackles for loss. He's always in the backfield. But he's making plays that don't even result in stats. Like, he took Jason Peters, a 330-pound man who's like a 9-time Pro Bowler. Like, Jason Peters isn't, you know, Eric Flowers or somebody.
Yeah.
This guy's a stud. He took Jason Peters during this game and threw him into Carson Wentz like he's a piece of fucking luggage. Like, it was insane.
Yeah.
I've never seen him play at such a high level, and I don't know if it's just the scheme that's unlocked him to be able to attack more, which I do think that's part of it, but he is playing at an unreal level right now. I mean, he's basically Aaron Donald without the fanfare.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody in our Slack channel compared him to Javon Kurtz, which I thought was interesting.
Wait, Casey or Landry?
Landry.
Oh, okay, right. Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say
Landry. I could definitely see the curse comparison, yeah. But I think he's just on a different level.
If curse was Casey's size, could you fucking imagine?
Oh my god!
Right. Crack.
Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
He's getting to be.
He got a little.
They say that PFF said that it was 7-for-7 and 100 and something yards. I feel like he made plays in the passing game, so I don't know if it was 7-for-7, but I also was completely inebriated.
I don't think he gave up a lot. Yeah. I'll say that.
I mean, we know he gave up a lot because I remember turning to you. I think you were sitting behind me and I said, we may have a Malcolm Butler problem. I may have to admit it now.
Can I argue that Alshon Jeffrey is a deceptively hard cover?
Do you think?
He's a very big man who jumps very well.
And he's good at the details of the little push-offs and stuff like that that go unnoticed. And there was one on one of the plays where Butler was covering him. Butler actually gets a great jam, and then Jeffrey gets away with a pretty blatant push-off at the top of the route to get open.
But let me say this. We are paying Malcolm Butler $60-something million. Dollars.
No, that's fair.
Is Alshon Jeffrey... I mean... We're talking about Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about, Julio Jones or something like that. This is a little worrisome. I mean, I know we don't have anything to worry about, really. Well, we may have John Brown to worry about, and if Malcolm Butler's on him, that could be a little bad.
I'm not worried about that.
But, I mean, we got Mike Williams, Keenan Allen coming up. I mean, we have receivers. Let's be honest here. Let's be honest here. This is not a good look for the Malcolm Butler experience so far.
It's not been great. I'll say the deep ball to Matthews, I don't know that that's 100% on him. I think
that was a safety issue.
I think he thought Vaccaro was going to pick him up, and Vaccaro was jumping a route underneath. And I think that was a miscommunication thing more than anything. It wasn't just him getting toasted, which feels a little bit better because these guys have been on the same team for 7 or 8 weeks, and they may not have all the anticipatory things worked out between the two of them, but it needs to be better from him overall. Because even if you take away that play, he still didn't have a great game. And you're paying him, like you said, $60 million. You need him to play at a high level. The good news is Adoree's playing outstanding on the opposite side, but...
Except for that Miami game.
Well, the Miami game was probably
the worst game I've ever seen Adoree play.
Yeah, that was
kind of good. I mean, you got to think he started all 16 games last year and 2 playoff games.
But I'm not sure. I haven't seen the stats specifically for the Eagles game, but I know against Jacksonville, the Jaguars were 0-for-5 with Adoree in coverage. Yeah. I mean, he pitched a shutout. So I think he's playing great.
Logan Ryan is playing really good. And that's a benefit of having Malcolm Butler is that Logan Ryan is playing really damn good this year. Yeah.
And one thing that they're doing that's interesting right now is for the Houston game and the Philly game, they have basically stayed in nickel the whole time. Yeah. They've left those three corners on the field like the least snaps of any of them is like 96%. So
which is utterly ridiculous.
They're basically all on the field at the same time.
That could maybe kind of play into the Malcolm Butler kind of getting burned. So I don't know. I'm not going to make excuses.
No excuses. Play like a champion.
I feel like Malcolm Butler, especially after this game. This game was my deciding factor. 4 games. I'm not feeling that we're getting the money out of Malcolm Butler at this point.
Yeah.
Can we all agree on that?
He needs to play better. Yeah, sure.
I want to hear you vocally say it,
yes,
Big Mike.
Yes. He has been bad.
He doesn't want to say it.
He has been a bad Malcolm.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Jayon Brown or do you want to talk about the Bills?
Let's talk about the linebackers, both Jayon Brown and Rashawn Evans.
I'm gonna talk about Rashawn. I'm gonna say one thing about Rashawn Evans. Once he realizes the playbook and it's all put together mentally, unfucking stoppable. Because this man is going to tear up people. He's throwing offensive linemen around. And it's something you don't see during the game because it was kind of in the commotion of it all. But going back and looking at highlights, he's strong, and and I cannot wait for him to mentally grasp the playbook.
Yeah. He still looks lost out there, but he is lost in the best possible way because he's just running around hitting stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not what you want him to do, obviously, but you'd rather him be doing that than running around tentative. So. Yes,
right. Exactly. Run around. If you're going to run around lost hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what he's doing. And he had some really impressive just feats of strength where he's just knocking 300-pound linemen like back 5 yards. And, you know, I mean, he's well,
like their horses that he chased when he was a boy.
But I think he's going to be good once he gets a hold of things, but he's not there yet. But Jayon Brown is fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
He covers so much ground. He's all over the place. He's a steal right now for the Titans because Wesley Woodyard missed a lot of that game and you barely noticed because during the second half when the Titans, you know, after that first drive of the second half where they gave up the long drive, they basically shut down the Eagles' offense the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And that was all with Jayon Brown in there as the primary play caller on defense. Yeah. And
big ups to Jayon. Big ups to Will Compton as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Will Compton had a huge Zach Ertz pass breakup.
Yeah, he did.
For sure. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we move on?
I'm good with the Bills. This will take like 5 minutes with the Bills.
Yeah. I also just want to say, I did love that we stole the Eagles celebration, the bowling celebration.
Oh, yeah, me too.
The Eagles did that last year a lot. Big fan of that.
Yeah.
Love that Marcus got it.
Yeah, Marcus isn't covering his junk. He looks like really a little boy. All he needed was a lunchbox and he was waiting for the school
bus. I like that he's not worried about his actual injury that he has on his arm. He's worried about his genitals.
Yeah, he was the lead pin, you know?
Yeah.
Got to be careful.
All right, let's move on to the preview of our Week 5 game against the Bills at Buffalo. The Bills lost last week to the Packers 22-0 in just a horribly Bills game.
That's two shutouts for them already, right? Because they got shut out the first.
Did they?
Yeah, didn't they?
Oh, wow.
Is that true?
I thought they might have got a mercy field goal or something.
Oh, maybe they did, but I thought they got shut out by the Ravens, too.
Yeah, they might have. They're not good. The whole Vikings thing was a mirage.
They're not good.
That's my analysis. They're not good.
They didn't win because of Josh Allen passing through there.
Stat correction. They did get a mercy field goal against the Ravens.
I thought they got... It was like 48-3 or something.
I thought it was 48-0.
Is like... it's somehow sadder.
47-3. Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to say three things. First off, this is the very definition of a trap game. So know that this is a team that we should be beating, and we're coming off a really emotional, hard-fought win. Very definition of trap game.
Yes.
And with a big opponent coming up next.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, like we alluded to earlier, preparation is the word. I at the beginning, I haven't felt nervous about a game this whole season. And I said that I'm actually starting to feel nervous about the Bills game.
Do you think that nervousness or the lack of nervousness is because we weren't supposed to win with an injured quarterback? Or
probably.
Okay.
Probably because I don't know. I really thought that I had faith in the coaching staff. And I don't know. Here's where my Titans, I guess you would say, superstitions or Titans feelings,
optimism
come in.
Sure.
Is that we always play down to bad teams.
Yeah.
But this is a new team, so I gotta work. I'm working with that. I'll talk to my therapist on Thursday and we'll get this, you know, worked out. While it's a trap game, we are always prepared. So that's number two. So I shouldn't be worried about that it's being a trap game.
Gotcha.
Offensive line for the Bills sucks. Their quarterback fucking sucks. Their defense is still a little decent. Jerry Hughes got like 15 pressures by himself versus the Vikings.
Yeah.
But our team is fucking good.
Yeah.
And I, right now, I'm not where I'm. Okay. I'm not going to lie. My heart is a little worried. Mentally, I'm not worried. Like, logically, I know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a game we should win. were better than the Bills, no doubt about that. You worry about just the random stuff. You know, the ball bounces off somebody's helmet and it gets returned for a touchdown, or, you know, just the random bullshit popping up. But if you're looking at matchups, there's nowhere where I feel like the Bills are just better than the Titans. Like, not any matchup across the entire field. So,
yeah,
I feel like this is a game they should win. I'd be highly disappointed if they didn't. Because, I mean, obviously...
Oh, I'll be inconsolable.
If they drop the game... If they drop this game after those last three, you know, it would... We'd still be 3-2, which is not terrible. It's not a bad thing. But you almost feel like, okay, well, now that doesn't look nearly like what we thought we were seeing.
Right. Yeah.
So, you want them to come out, build on the momentum. I'd love to see them come out and just...
Yeah, I want a blowout.
Yeah.
Like a 27-3 halftime thing where we're like putting Gabbard in for the fourth quarter.
Because even if we win 28-14, they're going to talk about those 14 points that they got put up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love a beatdown, continue to build the momentum. And then because that also from a, you know, I want the crowd at Nissan Stadium when the Ravens come to town in 2 weeks to be like engaged in a big Titans turnout.
Yeah.
And I think if the Titans go up to the Buffalo and beat the shit out of the Bills and come back 4-1, there will be a buzz. There will be a holy shit, this Titans team is something to watch. We need to go check it out kind of feeling. And I want to see that.
No, sure. I agree. We need to go and kick their ass and come back with a 4-1 going into the, because the Ravens are no joke. I mean, they're
good this year.
Solid as hell. And I'm like, Mike, I don't want to say this now before the Bills game, but if we do go up there and really kick ass and come home 4-1, to me, this starts to lead in to that, the feeling of the Titans' first season here in town where it's a new product, you know what to expect, and now all of a sudden, 4, 5, 6 games in, like, the home crowd is so bought in, and we need that so badly as a fan base, because is the reason why I brought up earlier about that the Eagles fans were not that loud on TV, I mean, I do genuinely mean that, but part of that is because I fully expected, and frankly, am a little used to, our fans mailing it in.
Yeah.
And look, we could go back down that conversation some other time, but it's like we need a reason to be fully bought in. And 4-1 after a solid ass win against Buffalo against a good Ravens team, that place will be hype as shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm with it.
Well, before we get to our predictions for the game, which I'm pretty sure I can predict, I want to leave you with a optimistic stat against the Bills. So the Bills have allowed 5.2 sacks a game, which is the most of any team in the NFL this year. That's 21 sacks. And so this could be a good day for a certain honorable Harold Landry. And
I think Jarrell Casey's probably going to get maybe 2 or 3 sacks this game.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, welcome to the honor roll, Carson Wentz. I'm excited that you're our first addition.
Yeah,
you're right.
No, that wasn't a sack. That was like me at a Ryan's Steakhouse going after the fucking nacho buffet. It was like coming around the corner, ripping the arm back. It was feast mode.
It's incredible how quick he got back there on that. He was in Wentz's. He was hitting Wentz by the time he hit the last step of his drop, which is insane.
Yeah. Like that shouldn't be back there yet.
The difference between Landry and everyone else is like, you can beat guys and get a good pass rush, but Landry beats guys so quick that there's no chance, even if it's a short throw, that the guy's getting the ball off. I mean, that's a game changer when you can do that.
Right. When you get there before he's able to even step up in the pocket, like that's an issue.
He can't avoid you or throw the ball because he's still moving backwards when you arrive. Right. Like, it's unbelievable.
Right. All right. So let's go, I guess, this way.
Okay.
And let's talk about our predictions. Zeebo, give us your Bills Titans prediction.
35-3.
Ooh. Alrighty.
I think we're going to blank them.
I'm sorry, just Titans. Just a joke. I never really clarified.
That was a terrible joke. Mr. Lebowski.
We're going to blank them. 28-0.
28-0.
Oh, I like that too.
Two blanks in a row. That would be devastating.
I want devastating.
Big Mike.
I'm going to go 31-10.
Ooh. Well, everybody's in the 30s. Let's go.
He was in the 28s.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ridiculous. Let's go 42 to...
Wow.
We'll give them six.
I'll sign up for any of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any of those.
All of those are acceptable, variable.
Huxley.
Okay. Yeah, you said Titans by 17.
Before we sign off here, Zach, you said you had a teaser that you wanted to give our fans.
Yeah, we're gonna have some big changes come to the F Words podcast here. So make sure we're doing two episodes every week. If you don't see an episode pop up, we may have some subscription issues. So this is your final warning before we switch over till next week. So please let us know at F Words Pod.
Yep.
On Twitter or fwordspod@gmail.com. You can email me.
Oh,
they could call into the hotline.
Yeah, we still have the hotline, but I don't know the number off my head. It took me like 5 minutes to find the number.
We'll tweet it out, yeah, or something.
5309, right?
But please let us know if for whatever reason you aren't subscribed on either Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, make sure you get your subscription.
We'll have an official announcement probably late Thursday afternoon, maybe Friday. And so
I wonder what it could be.
Get your popcorn ready.
Interesting.
Well, thanks for listening, Effers. Make sure to visit our sponsors at fortheville615.com for all your clothing needs. Rate and review us on whatever you're listening on, and follow us on Twitter at @FWordsPod, or don't, you know, you don't have to follow us on Twitter. Well,
no, he does. Yeah, he's right. You have to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you heard it. I tried, but you have to. You can get more of Mike's analysis on all things Titans at Music City Miracles.
Flames. Yeah. Flames all 22 is coming out this week.
Flames. Alert emoji. Yes. Siren emoji.
Is that your AAM handle?
We're football and other F words, and you've just been F'd.
For the boys!
For the boys! Fly, Titans, fly.
He's got Corey! He's got Corey!
He's got Huxley! He's got Huxley!
I feel like Josh Allen's gonna be flipping off the Bills sideline by the time the game's over Sunday.
Give me some offensive linemen. Just a young man from Wyoming.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.